Coming up, it's Media Matters with Marie Buskey and Marty Gibson, discussing the media through the RCR lens,
right here
on Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back to Reality Check Radio. You are here with Marie for this very fine morning, because we're back in the mornings now. Joining me, not my, well, my very own Slim Shady, my Eminem. You're here with Marie. Hey, Marty, how's it going?
Eminem. Thanks. Yeah, good.
Yeah, very good. Very good. There's a lot to chew through each week. I'm going to start with the one thing that I know that you probably won't be interested in. We can get it out of the way, but it's going to lead into a bigger issue, because I know that you're not a big fan of the sports ball, as in the rugby.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, and to be fair, I didn't watch the rugby either. I was away for it. I had the Great Game Weekend away in Auckland and seeing a very sick friend. So I completely disconnected, and I had to sort of retox for our catch-up today. But I did catch the All Blacks wading in on the Tino Ranga Teretanga debate with the Treaties Principle Bill. I have a very, very short explanation to this, and it is, well, TJ, you can think, express yourself however you want, but it's like when we were all at school and we were in school uniform. If you got caught smoking in town with your school uniform on, you got hauled up in front of the principal and you had words, because you were in your school uniform, so therefore by extension you were representing the school. If you're in that All Black uniform, baby, and you got that silver fern on your chest, you're representing all New Zealanders. So that kind of little escapade, no. Not when you're wearing the fern, my friend. You can say whatever you want in your private capacity on Instagram and TikTok, and you can absolutely sing like a canary, but when that fern is on that chest, you are representing everybody, not just a tiny fraction.
Yeah, I've got a bit of thinking of suspension. You know, I can go over the bumps and that. My thing would be, you can do it, but articulate what you think, and you better have a clear articulation, because if it's feels, then maybe stick to chucking balls around and eating vegan food, buddy, because I don't think you could come up with a convincing explanation about why it was worth doing that beyond feels and beyond, well, they're trying to take our rights away.
Well, it was virtue signaling.
The slogans that the incorporation the Maori Party have put together. Mm.
It was political posturing and virtue signalling. And the thing is the All Blacks are actually one of those things in New Zealand that is a unifying force. It's a unifying identity within this country.
We talk about more than the sum of our parts. Playing rugby is where Māori and Pākehā get together and are more than the sum of our parts. Yeah. The Polynesian aggression and commitment, and the Pākehā teammates going, hey, no, fuck, don't give away a penalty, babe. We do well.
Pretty much. But yeah, so that's all I'm going to, as far as Scott would say, that's all I'm going to say about that.
We'll weave it back in, I'm sure, Buskey, because it's, you know, it's obviously dominated the news, which is more than I can say for nuclear war.
Yeah.
Been pretty tough to read some of that stuff, hasn't it? It's just like our media tying themselves in knots to be on the side of Raytheon and Boeing and the military industrial complex. Gives me a chill.
Yeah, it does.
Like those Russians posturing with their hypersonic weapons in response to having hypersonic weapons fired at them with the help of American satellite support and the British.
Yep. Did you catch Paul's interview with Ivor Cummins this week?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought what he had to say on all that was quite interesting.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. I'd recommend people catch that as a replay. And also, there was Dr. David Bell, really interesting. The point he made is all of the stuff that Comrade Cindy and Bloomfield were saying, none of it was actually coming from the people who are making none of those claims of efficacy and safety were actually coming from Pfizer itself. They just kind of thought, well, you know, I've got a communications degree, so the way to do it is just to emphasize the positive and eliminate the negative.
The thing is it came from other leaders as well. So it's kind of that whole dumb ducks club. And I'm going to say dumb ducks, the whole dumb ducks club, which in this case was Biden, Trudeau, Macron, not quite so much, but definitely Jacinda Ardern and Scott Morrison sort of went along with it you know, yeah, to a greater or lesser degree, definitely Dan Andrews. So they, yeah, they're kind of like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, we'll say that. But also, again, all of this comes back to, I do wonder what was in that contract, because there were some little outliers in this that didn't do it as much as others. And one of the big outliers was the UK. They didn't quite follow suit. Boris didn't quite follow suit as much as the other leaders in lockstep. And I keep thinking to myself, for the longest time, why isn't that? Like, they didn't do they pushed back on a lot of the mandates, and they pushed back on so many of those things. And I suddenly thought it will probably be because AstraZeneca initially was the principal product, yeah, in the United Kingdom and not the mRNA. So therefore, ergo, they're not bound by so many things contractually. But who would know, because no one gets to see it, because it's all locked up. Like,
well, it's not fashionable to praise the British or the English, but there is that aspect of British culture that I love, which is just that bloody-mindedness, the camera soaring down, the gleeful disobedience to authority that you got to reckon with. And you know, if it doesn't pop out and come to the forefront in the face of Keir Starmer, I don't know when it will. There's a reason that they were the biggest empire in the world for a long time. They're bloody-minded, they're tenacious, and they've got a fair-mindedness about them that's not fashionable to talk about now.
Well, let's park Keir Starmer for a little bit, because he's going to pop up in an interview that we're going to talk about a little later. But I do, because I did flick it to you, and we have to talk about it, because we both tortured ourselves for like half an hour doing it, and I think we need to torture our listeners now. We need to share the pain, and that is, we sell it. Yeah, we're selling it. Jack Tame, and congratulations on your impending fatherhood, Jack. Jack Tame's interview with David Seymour and then Debonairi Wapaka on the Treaty Principles Bill. My word, God, that was
a masterclass in sophistry. Just like making these arguments that really didn't bear close scrutiny, and then interrupting any logical deconstruction of them.
Mm. Full credit to Seymour, and this is where he is actually that little tenacious campaigner, and you forget he's been around for, you know, I mean, was it 31, 32, he popped up, so he's been there a while. He just sort of kept on message, and he was sort of quite a metronome about it, and he would, you know, Tame would have sort of tried to go off in these weird tangents, and he would sort of come back and go, no, this is what we're doing, this is where we're at. And I thought that was very masterful on Seymour's part.
Yeah, he's kind of that mixture of convincingness and charmlessness.
Yes, at the same time. What point do you think Tame was trying to drive at with Seymour? Like, he must have had some vox pop or something he was fishing for, and he certainly didn't get. What do you think it was?
Okay, two things. The Freeman version of the treaty, which introduced the concept that Māori could hold on to forests and fisheries, which has been demonstrated to be incorrect and is the basis of so much of this. And the idea that he's required to push as a condition of his employer receiving the Public Interest Journalism Fund, that he's got to maintain a stance that Māori never ceded sovereignty, despite a group of chiefs meeting and unanimously deciding that they did in 1860. He knows better, because, yeah, that's the side his bread's buttered on. So that was mainly, you know, where I saw a lot of his limp-wristed objections coming from.
Yep. Meanwhile, across to Deb.
Yeah. Deb. Well, I mean, if Jack was practicing masterclass in sophistry, Debbie Ngāre Wapakea said, "Hold my waipiro," and just, you know.
Well, all I saw the whole time she was being interviewed was this, "I smell so precious and I want it. I smell so precious and I want it."
They've pivoted from, "They're trying to eradicate the treaty," to, "Hey, this is all being done by the Atlas Network, and the treaty is stopping New Zealand being invested in by overseas corporations."
Okay, I'm a noob here, because what the frick is the Atlas Network?
I've done limited research on it, but in terms of the amount of money it spends influencing opinion in New Zealand, it's minnow compared to, say, the Helen Clark Foundation. And there's not, you know, so much concern about that.
Well, I mean, honestly, she sounded like Kamala Harris saying Donald Trump, Donald Trump, yeah, Donald Trump in an interview.
Yeah, well, that was, she'd been schooled up to do that.
after she said it for about the seventh time, I don't even know who these people are.
Yeah, it's a logical fallacy, question of motive, basically.
Yeah.
She's saying David Seymour's only doing this for the benefit of some shadowy rich benefactors who want to come in and buy everything in New Zealand. That in Aotearoa. That was the tack she took. And, you know, we've got to remember about the Māori Party. They don't care if you find what they're doing utterly illogical. It's the kohanga generation of attack dogs that they've raised that they want to be dog whistling to.
The other point that did crack me up is when she kept going on about saying that these things here in Te Tiriti, the only things that protect New Zealand against this globalist and corporation. And I'm thinking, hold on, hey there, Deb. I mean, as if Māori have never, ever, ever been wooed by any new shiny technology or a power coming in to woo them, woo them with something.
Māori fell in love with Pākehā technology. They just weren't sure about the Pākehā. And in the same way as Pākehā fell in love with the Māori land, we just weren't sure about the Māori. So, you know, there's a certain symmetry to our historical relationship.
And also she pretty much did admit that, you know, she is superior. Right. Well,
She's kind. And you know, we practice manaakitanga, so we'll be benevolent dictators. You don't have to worry about that.
Mm.
But you can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, I'm going to go far beyond the Overton window on this.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let me sit down. I'm bracing.
Yeah, all right.
Right.
Firstly, let's talk about Te Rauparaha. We were talking about this
in the political panel. Mm.
You know, he said, actually, that was one of my ancestors. And yeah, he a lot of the land that we've got, it was taonga, you know, it was taken at the point of the spear or the musket. So this is the raping, murdering, torturing warlord who wrote Kamate Kamate, which is a waltz. How many people know that? It's a waltz. And it's interesting that this was the haka that Muppy Clark and her puppet masters chose to intimidate David Seymour in Parliament while taking a big shit on the 700-year kaupapa of Western parliamentary democracy, even as she is hypersensitive to perceived and imagined slights to her own culture. You know, it's that sacred anger. Te Rauparaha was almost New Zealand's Muhammad. You know, he was a deceptive, ruthless, brutal, murderous, and cunning conqueror. He was not without talent. You know, he was one of the first Māori to sell land to the New Zealand Company, and he was a keen supporter of the treaty because it enshrined his own ownership of the taonga that I mentioned earlier. So while Māori say they want to honour their ancestors, I also honour ancient Māori who were sometimes their ancestors through rape. I honour those thoughtful, creative Māori who were exterminated by their violent, personality-disordered compatriots at a rate that greatly accelerated when they got muskets, pigs and potatoes that allowed them to wage constant war. And it's that kamate kamate chanting, those kamate kamate chanting descendants of those tyrants who now seek to regress from Christianity and return to the miter's right feudalism of musket war era Māori. And, you know, we never really get down to those brass tacks. It's the descendants of those warlords who puppet mastered Cindy and Chippy into eliminating any talk about the musket wars in New Zealand's history curriculum. And why? It's because it's their dirty secret that much of the land they sought compensation for the sale of, often by their other ancestors, hardly had the blood of the previous owners dry on it when the treaty was signed. And their relationship with that land didn't go back centuries or millennia, as they claim, but mere decades before the treaty. You know, I'd argue that's why they cozy up to gangs, and it explains why there's never any hikoi or concern about the disproportionate neglect, abuse, and murder of Māori children by their whānau, or of the Māori violence rates that are 10 times us Europeans. They see violence as their source of strength and intimidation as their source of strength. As I've said before, I've experienced enough Māori bullying at school to last a lifetime. And to those who think they can intimidate away a debate about their inclination toward them being a chief and me being a slave, I say fuck mutu, which means enough.
You're very excited that I now have a beep button, aren't you?
No, you don't have to beep that. Fuck a mutu is a word that means enough.
Oh.
Dad, don't beep it.
Don't
colonise my canal. Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, that brings a whole new meaning to compulsory acquisition, doesn't it?
Did you read that opinion in the papers this week?
No. No, and actually, just what you were talking to, if you wanted to hear another sort of view around that, an interview that we did way back, Paul did, in September, and I think she also did another one as well with Leighton Smith, was a Dr. Elizabeth Rauter, and I think she's, oh no, I say Paul, and I think she's also spoken to Rodney too, actually earlier on. Oh. With Rodney, which may have even been last year with Rodney. But if you look up Dr. Elizabeth Rauter in the replays, and she talks about them, and she calls them the tribalists, doesn't she? That whole movement. And she beautifully and eloquently breaks down all these sort of elements that you've discussed in terms of how they've come about, where the historical hypocrisy lies, what those different hierarchies are, what is trying to be achieved. It's wonderful. Yeah. And she does it so clearly and concisely. So if you want to look further back than what you're being fed sitting across the table with Jack Tame, then check out anything that Dr. Elizabeth Rauter has done with us over the last couple of years. And
I mean, there is, I mean, at our base, we're all human.
Yeah.
And there's a beautiful inventiveness in Māori. There's a sense of freedom and joy that was released by Christianity and tino rangatiratanga in the British meaning of the word, which isn't chiefs dominating commoners and slaves. It's an Englishman's home is his castle. You can have a bit of land, you can grow stock there, and the law will protect you against your neighbour who's stronger than you coming and smashing you and grabbing them. And that explains why, after the Treaty of Sion, 50% of Māori were kūpapa. So now it's sort of a dirty word, but at the time, yeah, you've got to remember the musket wars. The fact, for me, one of the most pernicious things is that the new curriculum that Cindy introduced refused to allow any discussion of the musket wars, which killed 10 times more Māori than the land wars did, far more than died in World War, I think, 1 and 2.
Big numbers.
Yeah, and it was about to start again. It was about to kick off, and you know, there was, hey, we've got this technology and we seem to be pretty good at it, at a lot of it. Hey, why don't we concentrate on that and this Christianity idea where we forgive and we're not carrying this huge burden of utu and needing to have this accounting of who we owe some just awful violence to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, I think it's important we honour the Māori who recognise that, and the poets and the songwriters, the carvers, the people who, you know, for whom beauty was important rather than just violence.
Do you know the one question that Tame didn't ask that I would have loved to have heard asked?
Yeah, what?
What is Māori? It never gets asked, because I look at Debbie Ngāti Wepeka. Now, she's got an Irish mother. So she's probably like me, less than half Māori, definitely. And she kind of alluded to, because not all Māori are down with us, by far. I mean, Elliot alluded to that when we spoke the other Friday. And I know a number of commentators that are not down on this. A number of Māori just stepping back going, oh, don't drag me into this.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut your train of thought off, but those Māori are allied to us Pākehā, or, you know, you know, Pikininis, who, you know, want to see better outcomes for Māori children in education, in health, want to see Māori be economically so strong in New Zealand that they don't have to go to Australia to escape all this. You know, often the good kicks in late, you know, because in some ways it's so more exciting being violent, refusing to have an argument. You know, you feel there's a thrill in it. But it gets back to that Eric Weinstein point, and this is something National really need to think hard about, is the reason people keep going back to communism is because capitalism hasn't adequately given a consolation prize to the losers from it. So, you know, that's why Labor can always say, oh, you know, National don't care about the poor. Got to start talking about long-term and short-term kindness. Got to say, hey, listen, we both want the same thing. We're just, you're saying once you have full sovereignty and you've got a situation where the taxpayers are your slaves and they have to just give you money without, you know, question, and you can denigrate their whakapapa. Or you've got the commoners who, you know, the food of the commoners is inattention, and the food of chiefs is conversation. I'm mangling that. But, you know, you're saying once that you're back in balance with that and you, the chief, then everything's going to be fine. Yeah, I don't buy that.
No. No, one of the structures that have been in place, and Lee Taitua talked about this, was in terms of the once the treaty settlement started rolling out and you actually started financing and supporting quite heavily these iwi structures, right? Yeah. And these boards got created, these iwi boards that were cashed up. That's actually who you're looking at. It's not necessarily in tribal hapu or even going back to marae, but you're actually looking at a lot of these boards who have got all this money coming in. And at the end of the day, they're wanting to protect their income stream.
Well, it's just like this, the LGBTAK groups, you know. Once they get their gay marriage, they're just going to keep rolling on until you're normalizing eating feces, is I think the latest thing
I know. Green Party
member, he's bringing that to parliament. He liked eating poo, so it was natural that he'd go into politics.
Ugh, I know. Did you continue and watch that interview after the other time? You should have. I did. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That, honestly, and I'm going to call him that boy, even though he's like, I think there's gender. No, look, darling. Darling, if you've got a parsnip and a couple of Brussels sprouts, sweetie, you're a boy. Anywho, he's from up north. And so he was trying to talk about throw around all his identitarian credentials. And that's even before you got through the visual virtue signaling spectacle that he was wearing. And he literally, you know, oh, I'm Māori and I'm gender diverse and I'm from up north and I have a disability. Obviously, Fifth Syndrome is now identified as a disability, must be. Anyway, it was just like, gosh, you represent everything about identity politics that every normal sane person must hate. You know, I'm looking at that thinking, oh, can we have Darlene back now? Because that is what you've got. That's what you've got. And then you see the Greens as a block and anyway. So that was Q&A. The only other thing I'll say with Debbie and Ari Wepeka is, and this is again what I find so amazing, is that she kept referring back to, well, I can only talk about Taranaki, which is where she's from. The whole, you know, I smell so precious and I want it, is particularly with For Shore and Seabed. And she said this multiple times now in an interview. It cracks me up. She knows that Shane Jones is part of his provincial growth fund and the coalition are looking at doing a Trump drill baby drill, right? She knows this. She is itching, and she's even said it. We want the wealth that's below the ocean floor.
And we're going to dress it up in some concern for the environment until we get the precious.
Until we get the precious because we want it. Yeah, it's like, oh, come on, Debbie.
You've got to pay the tani wha.
Do you think we came down in the last hour? Anyway, sorry, I'm ranting again. I promised myself this week I wouldn't rant. Anywho, so let's go to somewhere next, which will allow me to rant again. And there's two things. One was you pointed me in the direction of an interview, and it actually dovetailed into a piece in the Herald quite nicely. Mm. Mike Benz, who I know you're a great fan of, he did an interview with Dan Bongino,
I'm also a great fan of.
If you're a great fan of. And it was around the censorship. So he's been ringing a massive bell around censorship and free speech and the extent that the censorship goes on to. I have to admit, even in that little clip, I was stunned at how early it started. The censorship.
In terms of when it really all kicked off after Trump got elected.
Yes. Yeah. 2017.
2017 is when they introduced AI as a means of going through, having a backdoor to social media and just pulling out threads, tweaking the algorithm so anyone who was mentioning certain words, and especially they found it really useful, the social media, in terms of when they wanted to foment the color revolutions. But then the barn door, oh, you love a good
agrarian. I haven't talked about a barn door for a long time,
but once it started swinging against them, they really had to do something about that. And so,
But also it kicked off with the Germans, which is what I found really, really interesting. So it was the Germans that sort of created it to calm the farm. It was in Germany. And the Americans sort of like, oh, we can't like the look of that. Let's that over.
Yeah. Unless it's the same people, maybe who meet in Davos, who have that agenda and they roll it out as they see fit. I mean, he excoriated Keir Starmer in that interview, said Keir Starmer is the test tube baby born in a lab, freak mutant of NATO. The UK Labour Party have taken that incredible power they have and have metastasized a censorship capacity, partly funded by the US, I should note. For example, their scan and ban technology for the Metropolitan Police is funded by the US Justice Department. So they have a real-time heat map of every Tommy Robinson supporter and every Nigel Farage supporter and what they post online. They're going to work with the UK and Europe and South America and Central and Eastern Europe and Asia to make sure that every ally of Trump on the international stage is not allowed to rise to power. And they're going to make it unprofitable through these global revenue fines, like the EU is threatening to impose to bankrupt X unless they censor Trump supporters at home. So, yeah, it's pernicious.
Yeah, really pernicious. I'm actually... We've had to move it a couple of times. I haven't quite pinned it down yet, but I am going to be interviewing Rolf Scholhammer. And when you sent me that, I thought, oh, I'm going to have to add that to the stuff that I'm going to talk to. Now, Rolf is Austrian. If that name sounds familiar to people, he was regular with Neil Oliver on his show on GB News. He is an acute observer of the political machinery and within culture and censorship, especially in Europe. Because this is all going on, but things are shifting. Here's my question to you, Marty. Are you seeing all of this? You can see how early that started. This is what's happening now. Things are starting to shimmy. They are starting to move away from the leftward slide, with the exception of...
The more government, less freedom. So let's call it out for what it actually is. Yep.
Yes.
Through fear. Yep.
Yes. And, of course, they're now panicking. They're panicking because the easy control that they've had is now over. The population are now starting to rise up. Look what just happened in Australia this week with this anti-disinformation bill. You know, people are going, nah.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Jones, you know, one of the metaphors he's using is it's like when the drunk psycho sees his wife and two kids leaving in the car at 3 a.m. in the morning after he's given them a beating and then shoots them and then shoots himself. That's the phase we're at with these psychos.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's unthinkable what the lame duck President Biden's doing, you know, offering to give Ukraine nuclear weapons when he's in a caretaker capacity. But it makes sense in that, you know, when you think, well, he's not really in charge. Anthony Blinken is, and he's got some weird things with Russia. And also, these guys, I mean, if we really knew what they got up to, if we, you know, got the Epstein lists released and knew the extent of sexual blackmail that controls these people who are feeding out the agenda to us, you know, the gig's up. So why not shoot at the fleeing car and then blow your brains out?
Well, it's that whole Blinken thing. You're right. And they're saying... it was on one of my many late night reading things. I saw something and it was referring to a targeted low emitting or low kilojoule nuclear strike.
Yeah, so nuclear war.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, this is like COVID all over again, and that you can't be a little bit pregnant.
It might be like the homeopathy of nuclear war. You just sort of, you know, dilute it right down and it creates health benefits.
I was just like, oh, this is utter madness, absolute madness. So then that sort of dials us into, because this is, again, all this sort of slow waking up that's happened. I was really delighted to see that disinformation bill sort of, you know, with the people power. I mean, Katie, Legal Hub, if you're wanting to know what we're talking about, listen to yesterday's Legal Hub with Katie Ashley Coppins, and she covers it there fantastically well.
Katie Ashley Coppins.
Yeah, and that is the power of the people, and it was brilliant. The digital ID that they're trying to sneak through via stealth to protect the children against social media, but obviously not Pornhub, is, you know, that I was just like, oh, okay, people are waking up. And I was stunned to see Bruce Cottrell. So this is where we weave. I think we've got a Trumpian weave going on here, Marty. Trumpian weave. Bruce Cottrell. See, I miss the fact that you don't buy the paper anymore, that you get it digital. I miss your Russells. I have to do the Russells for you, I think. He, in his opinion piece, protest is vital even if you don't back the cause. So, of course, huge big picture of the HeCoin. I thought, oh, yeah, that's what he's going to be covering off. And one of the things that I fully agree with him, like I was talking to Mr. Marie about this. I had no issue with the HeCoin and doing what it did and all the rest of it. And as I said the other week, I love Māori coming together and that sense of power and being part of a protest too. I now understand, having, you know, taken up protesting in my 50s, I understand that togetherness, and there's a power that you get and a feeling when you're with a whole bunch of people around a cause. I totally get that. So you would want to be part of that. Cool. All there. So he's sort of protecting the right that we have as New Zealanders to do that, which is full credit.
Yep.
But he did, it's at that, you know, when you see people, and he's one of them, like normies, who are sort of waking, this is my view, waking up, actually seeing what the issue is, and that almost touching it, but they're sort of like, they're just not quite grabbing it.
Why is Facebook bad, but Pornhub's okay for kids? I just don't understand that. And they must have made a mistake. No, Bruce. The bug is the feature, Bruce.
Yeah. He's getting there, though. Baby steps, baby steps. So in regards to that point, he said, closer to home, our neighbour Australia is currently in the process of introducing parliamentary legislation that will prevent people under the age of 16 from using social media. To enable such legislation, every Australian will require a digital passport, ensuring that they are old enough to be interacting with online services of their choice. Such a move has major ramifications for the privacy of every internet user and their freedom to surf the internet channels of their choice with anonymity.
Oh, you're struggling with that. Go on, say it again.
Anonymity.
There we go.
Actually, I think that the ramifications are much, much, much bigger than that, Bruce. But it's nice that you actually grabbed at least one of those wee tentacles. So kudos for that. But that's just it. It's like you grab, it's really weird. Like they grab the little bit on the fringe, but they don't actually grab the big elephanty. It's like they grab the tail of the elephant and not
the
elephant.
I'll keep quoting Bob Moran. Most people just cannot get their heads around the idea that those in charge mean them harm. They butt up against it like some sort of aquatic creature in a fish bowl.
Mm.
Just bang their head on it. Like, even though all the evidence is pointing in that direction, hey, these people, you know, they're not joking when they say there's too many useless eaters on Earth. And they're not joking when they say you're cattle. They're not joking when they think you're consuming too much, even as they're flying on private jets. They mean it. And there's something in their little satanic sort of code of ethics that means before they impose it on you, they've got to tell you. It's dupe's delight.
Yeah. He then sort of a few paragraphs later continues with, meanwhile, back in the UK, the Online Safety Act introduced last year has resulted in online warriors being imprisoned solely for comments they'd made on social media platforms. It's quite obvious that the introduction of such laws can easily overwhelm the desire for free and open dialogue, or if you like, freedom of speech. Yes.
Mm.
Yes. But, you know, as Debbie Nardi Whipacker said in Q&A, she's going to be a benign dictator, Marty.
Yeah.
It is that grasp, isn't it? That grasp of, no, actually, it's more than the nuance of the sometimes you just need a hard no.
Well, I mean, the issue isn't that there are psychopaths who want to rule the world. There always have been. The issue is, firstly, that now they've got the technology to actually do it. And secondly, and most importantly, the issue is that they've, after a careful studying of human nature, worked out the way to manipulate people to the extent that the big problem is the dumbfounded dipshits who are enabling all of this. And so, you know, I mean, that's a lot of my thinking around RCR. Like, we're almost like we're a radio for the notices, the people who kind of get it. And the problem with the dumbfounded dipshits isn't that they don't get enough information. It's just that, either as Bob Moran said, they can't get their heads around the idea that people in power mean them harm. So you get this fawning response, like so many Cindy files had to Cindy, or, you know, they're trying to shag the women who do have that fawning response. Well, they just sort of see themselves as enforcers, and they've bought that idea that's been used to manipulate us, that those who do notice are dangerous to them and mean them harm and are evil or are misinformed. So that's the crux of our problem. That's something we're really going to have to work out at RCR. Mm. It's like, well, you know, we've got a loyal following of people who get it, and there's no point in just keeping on reassuring ourselves that we're right. It's like, well, what are we going to do with these dumbfounded dipshits who are, you know, who are enabling these psychos?
Part of it, I think, is also having a wide range of conversations. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I've been quite proud of with what we've been trying to do at the station, is especially this year, we've been able to draw more people in from the other side of the conversation. So full kudos for Takuta Ferris. He's become a regular from Te Pāti Māori with Paul, and he will come on. Now, a good chunk of what he says I don't agree with, but it doesn't matter. Does not matter. He comes on and he has civilized conversations with Paul and he puts out his point of view. Brilliant.
You and I can both be dropped into a big room or even a hikoi full of Māori. We'll be fine.
Yeah, good as gold.
I get on good with them. You get on good with them. I love them. And I really, as I said earlier, I want to see better outcomes for them. You know, but you're not going to get that if I'm a slave and you've got midwits like Debbie Nato or Packer as the chiefs. It's just not going to happen. And so it occurred to me that, I mean, in some ways, I'm similar to the people on the hikoi. I see the people who are driving a lot of this stuff as evil. But the difference between us is I don't want to shut down discussion about it or exploration of the topic. I want exploration, and I'm not seeing exploration of any of the things that I'm really concerned about. Why is there that huge, huge spike in miscarriages on the VAERS data? Mm-hmm. Why is New Zealand's mortality rate just, you know, why is it up 188% in young people? I want to talk about that. I don't want to shut down discussion of it. And that makes all the difference.
Mm. And that goes back to what Mike Benz was saying, is in terms of that censorship, when you've got the censorship that's pulling out the key words and actually closing down any form of debate or discussion, and you are having those who are only being fed the information that they're getting from linear media, which we now know is dying, but even if they are going to social media, unless they're on X, and even then there's a certain amount of content moderation there, but unless they're on X, they're only getting a very, very, very one-sided, sanitized view of anything that's happening right now.
I mean, do you ever wonder about, you know, often RCR will post an interview and it'll get maybe 4 likes and 1 repost? I just think, man, I mean, especially consuming the media that I do, just thinking, well, that's so crap and this is just so life-changingly informative.
Yeah, shadow banning.
So, I mean, I'll just keep saying, people, especially, you know, Foundation Members Club, thank you, members, and share, please share. Like, if there's something, if you're talking about a topic with someone and they're hopelessly ill-informed because they believe in Paddy Gower, send them a link to the interview that you've heard. Just please do that, because it's going to take that direct, uninterrupted contact with people. That's your job. And it's as I said, it's not that these people don't have enough information in some ways, but you have to almost say, hey, look, you're wrong. Here's why you're wrong.
Yeah.
It might not come naturally.
Heather, I know you didn't read the Heather Duper Seattle, but there was only really one, and it just speaks to the point that you just brought up, only one paragraph in there that I really highlighted out, and she's talking about the hikoi in the bill. That includes repeating what the left now loves to call disinformation. Senior MP Willie Jackson keeps on shouting, literally shouting at times, that Seymour wants to rewrite the treaty. That is factually untrue. No one's touching the treaty. Seymour's redefining the principles. They are not in the treaty. They were only created in 1987. They were acknowledged by a government in 1989. They've been re-acknowledged and changed in 1989, 1991, 1992, and 1995. So clearly they are changeable. What's the problem with changing them again? And the problem, of course, is the other side. We are so precious and we want it. That's the problem.
It's also the willingness to be deceptive. You know, did you listen to the obfuscation of Debbie Ngāre Wa Pākehā when Jack Tame was asking about making a gesture of pointing a gun at David Seymour and one of his colleagues and shooting him in the head? And yeah, she's like, oh, well, you know, people who know me, you know that I'm, say, me, and just all of this bullshit.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's her auntie gesture. That's her fire
dead
gesture.
Yeah, auntie gesture. Yeah, well, you try doing that. And yeah, that willingness to be deceptive and think that you're being cunning by doing it, which is a very narcissistic trait, I have to say.
Well, the in Thomas Cochran, he again talked about the Hecoid, but the only bit that I found particularly interesting, he quoted a couple of polls. I haven't been keeping track of the polls, but he quoted a couple of the polls, and one of them was Talbot Mills, which we know is the internal poller for Labour. Has National on 34%, Labour on 33%, the Green Enact on 10%. So then that takes that right block to 44 with National Enact, 43 with the Greens and Labour.
Say that again. 44 versus 43, is it?
Yeah. So National Act is 44, Greens, Labour, 43.
Mm.
Okay. So that leaves you a gap of 13. New Zealand First on 7, and Te Pāti Māori on 3.3. Now, if we accept that Te Pāti Māori are, you know, absolute fringe dwellers on this, but see, the interesting thing for me is that New Zealand First on 7%. They've held that number. That number has been held quite steady, depending on the pollsters, between 5 and 7%. But over threshold, they've been holding that ground. And that is one of the things I think politically that's now happening at the moment is you've got Seymour, who's harvesting soft votes from National. You and I talked about that last week. Te Pāti Māori is also, I think, harvesting a few of those soft Māori votes because they get to play in a slightly different sandpit off to one side. The Greens, how on earth the Greens? Well, the Greens get that youth vote. I mean, because the Greens, those voters are not identifying with Labour. Yeah. They're picking, so they've got they're the woke vote. So if you want to know,
we don't
how many
understand
woke
them because we haven't gone to the same school they've gone to. When we think about being at school, we think, oh yeah, they're going to school, we went to school. It's not the same thing.
No, but it's that 7% to me is actually, that's quite a good little group of people that I think politically sit in the middle. I mean, I know the other side would like to paint New Zealand First out to the right, but they're not really. They've got a lot of social development plans that are actually more from the left of centre playbook than the right of centre playbook.
Me, and I've often said this on Twitter, Marty Ozone, if you want to follow me. It astonishes me every time I realise Shane Jones is my favourite Kiwi politician. So it gives a bewildered feeling. And I'm probably most at home with New Zealand First now because of the Māori dimension to it, of that thoughtful, post-Christian, let's get on more than the sum of our parts aspect of it. I'll never be against Māori.
Mm.
Like all of the stuff I've said this morning, it's not against Māori. It's about culture, and there's two strands of Māori culture. One of them is the aroha, all the good stuff, and using technology, not feeling that you're inferior. And then there's the warlord part. I'm against the warlord part because I come from a culture that's faced down people who wanted to make my ancestors slaves and faced down people who wanted to tyrannize me. And yeah, I'm not for that.
Mm. And if you look at, again, going back to our friend Debbie, they, for a party that is so keen to hang on to identity, it's literally in their name, it's all about the identity. You look at New Zealand First, number 1, 2, and 3, all Māori.
Yeah.
Number 1, 2, and 3.
I'd also add, she's so keen to say that New Zealand's law enforcement system is hopelessly racist, disadvantages Māori. And yet, when you listen to her absolute confidence in the ability of the judiciary to decide what the treaty principles are, her faith is complete. It seemed contradictory, but yeah, Jack didn't have the stones to call her on that, or the brain maybe, I don't know.
Mm.
And yeah, it's like when Māori Party policy said, accept all Treaty of Waitangi or Waitangi Tribunal decisions on this, this, and this. It's like, well, if you're going to just give that blanket what these guys say is right, then that's a pretty good argument that they're hopelessly compromised and partisan.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting? This again, I love the weave. I feel a weave coming on. Professor Rob McCullough talked about this with the media, about how there are the favourite experts, right? Everybody goes back to the favourite experts all the time.
Bank economists.
Yeah, but it's the same with us. When it comes to the treaty, they always go back to the same group of experts who are the arsonists that set the fire in the first place. You know, where is Dr. Elizabeth Rauter on this conversation? Where is Professor Paul Moon? You know, there are other people and experts on
Public Interest Journalism Fund forbids them talking to them.
Exactly. And the other, so where this weave is coming in, the other article that I flicked you was in Saturday's Herald, US health nomination rings global alarm bells. Talking about Robert F. Kennedy's appointment.
Yeah.
And talk about, you know, no parties without punch. The experts that they went to discuss this was Helen Patousis-Harris and Dr. Nikki Turner. I mean, really? Really? So they, I just love it. It's something said.
The pearl clutching.
Oh my gosh. It's something that's going to impact us across the world, said Dr. Helen Patousis-Harris, vaccinologist at the University of Auckland and co-director of the Global Vaccine Data Network. The whole global community are talking about it, and certainly colleagues in the United States are really quite rocked by it because they know that essentially they're seeing the unraveling of all the effort and work that's gone on. You're talking about a very high profile position of someone who doesn't use critical analysis and evidence in his thinking, said Dr. Nikki Turner, principal medical advisor of the Immunization Advisory Center. So I think anyone in health services should be deeply worried about that. She's obviously not listened to any interview.
Projection is strong in that one. And I'll carry on with that. I think the issue is the undermining of people's confidence in science. I mean, people's confidence in science has nothing to do with whether the science is right or not, Nikki. Let's just say that for a start. And government decisions around science. Okay. Science is not perfect, but science is the best we've got for making clear decisions for people's health. And to suddenly decide that personal rhetoric and people's opinions are more powerful is very scary. Now, okay, let's look at the science. Let's look at the mortality. Let's look at the way mortality spiked in the 1 month after vaccinations, to the extent that you had to count people unvaccinated for the first month after the vaccinations to kind of even it up. Let's talk about some of that sloppy science. That's all we want to do. We're on the same page, Nikki.
Well, yeah, and Patousis-Harris went on to say, however, she said this approach was straight, and this is in regards to RFK's approach with his documentary film Shot in the Arm. Patousis-Harris, however, said this approach was straight out of the disinformation playbook. He would not say he was anti-vaccine, but spread false and conflicting information that gradually eroded the trust in institutions and health services. No, not disinformation at all, Helen, like when you went on National Breakfast Television and you told the entire nation of New Zealand that the COVID vaccine stays in your arm and doesn't travel, even though a biodistribution study from Tokyo in Japan was out on the table in medical literature and peer-reviewed and publicly accepted at the time that showed that that sucker went, that spike protein went everywhere, especially the ovaries. Just saying, Helen.
And crossed the blood-brain barrier. Yeah, you haven't come out and nullified that little hypothesis, have you? So you can clutch your pearls all you like and frame yourself as a scientist, but really, yeah, you're not doing too well.
No, in this article, this entire article, I again look at this, not one portion in here did, who wrote this, Isaac Davison, Isaac, not once did you actually go to somebody else to actually get a contrary opinion. I'm sure Dr. Simon Thorney would have given you at least a modicum of pushback on any of this. Did you actually think to contact him? He's at the Auckland University, just so you know. I mean, you could have given him a holler, dog and bone. Hey, you know, Simon, have you got any comment? No.
Oh, well, poor old Simon. I mean, he's got a wife and a kids and mortgage, so it's, you know, one, you know, the Woody Allen of New Zealand public health, Michael Baker, gets paid to put forward his views. Thornley is penalised for them. So, you know, that hasn't
happened. No, it hasn't. But that's okay because RNZ's here to save us, Marty. Did you know that?
Right, okay.
Okay. I just know that you're so comforted at the thought that Radio New Zealand's here to save us. In an email to Staff Week this week, Public Broadcaster highlighted key areas of its standards, including emphasising the particular importance that staff do not in any public forum state how they vote or express support for any particular party, express views for or against any policy which is a matter of party political debate, advocate any particular position on an issue or controversy or debate, exhort a change in high-profile public policy. We often remind Kamahi of our editorial policy during major news events, and it's a feature of our broader training programs.
Well, there goes Joanne Forbes' entire show.
Well, actually, it was all about Joanne Forbes' social media post. That's what sparked it off. Joe got us. So, you know, anyway, I was going to try not get ranty.
It's been a grumpy show, hasn't it? But I know, you know, we're so sexy when we're angry.
Oh, I get so grumpy. I don't mean to. I really genuinely don't mean to get grumpy. But the good news is, as Marty was saying, the important thing is about getting this information and sharing. And there are awakenings all the time. And, you know, that whole cultural effect where you can see that they're starting to sort of grab things. And I think the key is finding something that you can actually sit down and have a conversation around and whatever it may be to actually sort of spark something up. So you can't quite go for the big picture straight away because, as you just said before, people are not quite there yet. But there
but
are lots.
Can pack your bags, get the kids in the car and leave. In fact, here's a song request. Play Tony Childs, I've Got to Go Now. There you go.
There you go.
That's what we've got to do.
Yeah, so we've got to do that. So take a look. There are some really fantastic interviews that we have done.
There's a path out of it. But, the dumbfounded dipshits, you've got to do that creepy thing where you just put your finger on their lips and just say, shh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've got to go now. Right.
Right. We do have some feedback. Let me just hold the phone caller.
Do you reckon we've got a fire on us, Marie? Are we too small?
Oh, I don't know. I really don't. Well, they're possibly on me now because they didn't know anything about me at the beginning of a court case, but I know a certain prosecutor that had to bone up by the time we got to oral submissions. He figured out what side my bread had buttered on, but that's another story. Anyway, I digress. Right, to Marie. Hi, Marty and Marie. I've said for a while, these freaks will burn down half the world and stop Trump from taking the White House. They cling to authoritarian power with a lack of serious supporters. Yeah, that's
right. Well, we covered that.
Yeah, we did cover that, definitely. This is from Liz. Hi, Liz. She says, hi, Marie and Marty. Just listening to Media Matters on the HECOR. Yep, it's a doozy for sure. Thanks for tackling this. Not easy. I agree with Marie's statements that we shouldn't be relying upon government to do anything to make things better. And that's my take on the comment. And yes, you're right. I mean, we're abrogating far too much of ourselves.
It takes away agency. If you ever get government telling you that everything bad that happens to you is someone else's fault.
Yeah.
Never think carefully with it before you take the bait in that particular trap.
Yeah. Sovereignty begins and ends with you, and you have got that. Yes, it's up to us. Yes, it is. Whoever we are, to take responsibility for ourselves, Māori included. We all need to stop being victims or feeling guilty for the things out of our control. Having said that, maybe more guilt would be good for some. It's ignored too many nowadays. I could play the victim over the COVID silliness, but what's the point? Anyway, we need to stop blaming everyone else for our own problems. We need to look at ourselves and see what we can do to change things. I'm making an attempt not to take sides on this. I see issues with both and realise, as you mentioned, that there are more things at play here than are obvious. It pays to be cautious, research, observe, listen to the differing viewpoints. I'm also a person who believes in God, so prayer is vital. Our nation needs God's help. We've turned away from reliance upon him and decided we can manage ourselves minus his participation in our lives, and it's not going well. Thanks for your insights and observations. Keep up the excellent work. From Liz.
Logos, Liz. Yep, I understand. Even from not particularly religious viewpoint, which I know, you know, both you and I, probably you more than me, but you kind of do need that external idea of truth.
Yes. Yeah. You and I talked about it months and months and months ago, but remember I talked to you about sacrifice, that as part of that self-agency that we have,
you sacrifice the present pleasure to the future is the basic mechanism of that. Jordan Peterson talks about it a lot.
He does. And also that is one of the things that with particularly Christianity, but most spirituality and religions, there's always an element of sacrifice built in. And when you actually take all of that away and you have an entire generation where for them sacrificing
What thou willst becomes all the law, as Aleister Crowley said.
Yes. And comfort, you know, Anywho, This is from Pete. A wonderful show, guys. I can't rate Marty highly enough. Oh, some Marty love.
That on to my wife, Pete. Thank you.
A very healthy perspective on what's happening at the moment. Thanks from Pete. Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, hi,
guys.
Foxton.
Hi, Mike from Foxton. Hi, guys. I'm actually getting to hear Eminem live. And Marty, your comment on the Hikoi was just so insightful. I'm always astonished at your ability to shine light on the real things being said. And then the remedies are just brilliant. I wish I had half the understanding and ability you have.
Oh, you got it, Mike. It's easy enough. But thank you.
I would be in a far better place if both of you were running the country. Now, Mike, we've had this conversation before. Maybe we should get a gold standard again. Please stand for government because I would back you both. Keep up the brilliant job, Mike. Mike, I've talked about this before. I'm trying to preserve my blood pressure and my dyspepsia. And believe me, running for government would not be good for my health. Mm. You think I'd be renty now?
Yeah, but it would be better. Like, as I said, you know, if I were in charge, things would be better for Māori.
Yeah, well, the Māori
party. Whereas if Debbie Ngarawapaka was in charge, I think I'd probably be in a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm. Marie and Marty, your Media Matters commentary is 100% on the money. Awesome work. Let's hope some national MPs are listening. Thanks, Alvin. Thanks, Alvin. This one is from OJ. It is changing. I was waiting for Trevor's confirmation. Thanks, Marie. And I also love the 2M's show. Just love it, from OJ. And I've just got also a comment here that I'm going to read from Trevor Loudon. Did you catch my Trevor Loudon in the end, like the other week?
I caught a bit of it, but I think I got interrupted.
Yeah, it was.
I've got to go back because I always love hearing from Trevor.
Yeah, it was brilliant. So, of course, since I've spoken to Trevor, we spoke just before they'd announced RFK Jr. And then, of course, since then, Matt Gaetz has dropped out of the running and they can't remember the name of the woman who they've renominated. It was an interesting interview about Tulsi Gabbard. I think Trump is following the adage of keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. I would say that as soon as Gabbard starts working against Trump's agenda, she'll be gone. I can't see how she can further the communist cause in a position she's gotten unless she starts leaking intelligence to Russia or any other adversary. I'm curious as how she thinks that she would get away with it. I'm not overjoyed by her appointment, but we'll see how it goes. I think
I did catch that, Marie. And you know, the other interesting dimension is Marco Rubio being dropped. And this was something that Mike Benz was very, very clear about. He couldn't understand what was going on with him being basically appointed to a place where he had control over all of those agencies that are doing all of this stuff when he's so involved in it. So he said, I he's either going to have to stab his old mates in the back or he's going to just carry on with what they're doing. Either way, he's not the right guy for that position.
Yes, I did catch that. And that actually possibly falls under keep your friends close and your enemies closer, doesn't it? I think Matt Gaetz' appointment was brilliant, but of course, as we now know, he stood down. Who better than someone like Trump who can be vilified by a department who is going to head? He has been a constant thorn in the side of both the DOJ and the FBI, so who better to scandal than some sexual misconduct charge would be there to discredit Gaetz? The DOJ tried it with Trump. Now they're going after Gaetz. I can see these indictments will start to flow when Trump takes office. The Senate cannot oppose Gaetz's appointment. That would be unconstitutional. If they did, Trump can appoint him via congressional recess rules. That was what I couldn't remember last year, the recess rule. The president has the right to appoint anyone he likes to his cabinet. Every other president has done likewise. Cheers, Mark. It's interesting that Gaetz did stand down and he sort of claimed that he didn't. There was obviously something came up. There was obviously something that was so big that they couldn't get over, and he stepped aside to allow someone to move in. I don't think he's really going to be going anywhere. He's going to prop up somewhere else in that space.
Yeah, I really didn't. I wasn't on top of that, but I have watched him talk, and, you know, again, you can't underestimate the extent to which these often Mossad honey trap techniques are used to keep people singing the song.
And I
am very concerned that we don't acknowledge enough that it happens in New Zealand. Who knows what happens on these overseas junkets that James Shaw went on to hopelessly compromise our agriculture by including it in the Paris Accord commitments, even though the Paris Accord specifically exempted food production. You know, what happened to make him play so badly against New Zealand's national interests when he was sent there to ostensibly oversee them? So, you know, with Matt Gaetz, you know, there's that thing of the DVD, It would be a shame if this got out. That's another thing people are unwilling to really face, is the extent to which that's used as a means of hurting these puppet leaders.
Mm. And remember, if you've got any comments, 2057 is the text. Inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email. And, of course, we'll do it all again next week. 10 o'clock now, 10 o'clock on a Thursday, so we've moved. So make sure you tune in then and, yeah, send us your feedback. We'd love to hear it. Right, Marty? Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much, Marie, and thanks. Keep up the good work you're doing. And, yeah, everybody, hey, yeah, sit tight. There's a path out, but we're going to have to... We're going to have to work at it, and we're going to have to be resolute.
Mm, we will. We'll get there. All right. Take care, everybody. Make sure if you've got something you want to listen to, dive into those replays. There is so much good stuff there. And enjoy. Thanks, buddy. And share.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.